Okay, my name is Danny Werfel, and I'm a director in the public sector practice at the Boston Consulting Group.
So the public sector practice and a private sector job, that's a good kind of a balance there. All right, so first of all, tell us what you're going to do at the Boston Consulting Group.
Well, Tom, I'm going to continue my journey in helping the public sector achieve management excellence in any way that I can. This firm, the Boston Consulting Group, has great talent. It has a very impressive reputation for helping corporations and government entities around the world solve problems, design and implement better approaches. I've joined the BCG's public sector practice because I remain committed to helping the public sector achieve management excellence in financial management and in a broad array of areas beyond that. I think when I was in government, I got to be involved in some of the more complex management challenges. It was about 17 years of a career in the federal government, and I learned a lot and can bring a lot to the table, and there's a lot of people here at BCG that can teach me because they've been helping public sector entities around the world solve problems. I think marrying up what I've seen and what I can bring to the table with a team over here, I think we can take these solutions to public sector entities, whether they be federal government, state and local governments, international governments, and really make good things happen in helping solve problems. And I think that broadly, I think the partnership between the private sector and the public sector is really critical. I think there's an inevitability that government is going to become more modern and to become more effective and to deliver services better for the citizenry. And I think in order to get there, there is an effective partnership where the public sector is bringing its solutions to bear and the private sector is bringing its solutions to bear, and they're working together.
So now that you've had some time to reflect on your government service and you're transitioning to a new way to approach it, what do you think are the biggest challenges that government faces based on your experiences both at the IRS and at the White House?
Well, I think, first of all, agency missions and programs tend to grow in complexity and diversity. I mean, if you look at a federal agency, you know, today versus 5 years ago versus 5 years before that, there tends to be more on their plate in terms of the types of things that they're being required and asked to do, whether through statutory mandates, regulatory mandates, other emerging realities that cause that government agency to have to take on more. And at the same time, you know, in order to carry out those missions, we need to be investing in infrastructure to carry out those missions effectively. And that infrastructure includes people, getting the right people on board with the right skills and training and talent, the right technology solutions, the right policies and procedures. And so really it's making sure that as we can react to these new and changing challenges that the world is presenting federal agencies, that they're making the appropriate investments and adjustments to their operations to meet those challenges effectively. And it's very often about reforming what you're doing, making it more modern, leveraging technology. And because we operate on a limited resource base, and in today's budget environment, a declining resource base, critical to all these efforts is as you're modernizing, as you're figuring out new solutions to these emerging challenges, you've got to remember to drive efficiencies in all of your operation. And, you know, I've seen it, you know, I would never say that any federal agency that I've been involved with or seen is at its absolute efficiency point. There's always opportunities to cut costs. There's always opportunities to figure out more efficient ways to do it. So that has to go hand in hand with your new, more reformed, more effective approach for meeting mission.
Now, you did see some progress in your time in government because now all except a couple of military services have been getting clean financial audits, some for the first time in a long time, finally Homeland Security. What do they have to do to maintain that level of financial prowess, if you will, and keep on improving with it?
Well, Tom, I'm a big believer in learning from history. And so in order to answer that question, I think, how did they get there? What did they do to get the clean audit opinion and to improve their financial management? And most of what drove those improvements were standardization and automation. And I think at the end of the day, that's really what's critical to effective financial management and to passing your audit, is that your policies and procedures are standard across your agency. There's not a lot of variation around that, a lot of documentation, strong internal controls, testing of the effectiveness of those internal controls, and just driving that standardization. Along with that, automation is key. And the thing that gets auditors upset is when they see a lot of human intervention into the tracking of finances, because with human intervention, there's a higher degree of variability and a higher probability of error. So in moving forward, I mentioned earlier that our agency missions tend to grow in complexity and diversity, and that could strain financial operations, and maybe, you know, there might be an inclination to create more diverse financial operations to support. But what you have to do is stick to standard approaches and make sure that as your agency is growing in its own potential complexity, that your financial operations are maintaining a constancy and a standard. And that is going to involve some discipline on behalf of the agencies and training. You know, the people that are managing financial operations across the government need to understand how to drive standard and automated approaches and how to do it in periods in which the agency's mission and programs are constantly changing.
We're speaking with Danny Werfel, now with the Boston Consulting Group, but recently with 17 years in the federal government. And you spent a lot of time early on in the Obama administration working on issues of spending transparency, which is different from the financial audit question. And there was a lot of progress with respect to the stimulus bill that passed in 2009. Why is spending generally, making it transparent, still seem so tough?
It's a really good question. And I did. I was there on the ground when we were reacting to the USA spending bill, to the Transparency Act, and building the USA spending tool, and then again on the ground when the Recovery Act was passed and we were helping deploy recovery.gov. And what I learned during those periods, and I think the big lesson learned there, is that our systems in government, our financial systems that exist to track all of our finances and transactions, were not built in the manner in which USA Spending and recovery.gov were intended. Our systems were built years before that with a more traditional accounting framework in mind, where as we were tracking funds that were either coming into the federal government or out of the federal government, we were doing in such a way to build traditional financial statements like a balance sheet or an income statement. And now suddenly these laws come out and they're asking for information in a very different way, in a very different format, and then actually in a way that's much more intuitive to the taxpayer and the citizen, which is, what did we spend the money on? Who got the money? How much money? So whether it's a university or a contractor or a state or a city, what did we spend the money on? How much? When did the payment go out the door? That's why these laws are so important and they're so transformational, because you're much better at the intersection between what the citizen and what the public wants to know about government spending. You know, I used to say this all the time. We would get millions and millions and millions of web hits on USAspending.gov and recovery.gov, and tens or hundreds of hits on our agency's balance sheets. That doesn't mean the balance sheets aren't important. They're important because they drive discipline in our financial operations and help mitigate all types of financial risks. But when you're talking about the intersection between what the public is interested in seeing and reading, USA Spending and recovery.gov are really at the center of that, of that crossroads where the public demand for information and federal government financial information meet. And so what we've had to do, what the government has had to do, is react to the fact that the systems were built to make balance sheets, but the USA Spending law and the recovery.gov need the information in a much different format. And so over the past several years, agencies have been adjusting their approaches to how they maintain data and collect data on their spending and their operations, and there's been a tremendous amount of progress. One other point to raise about spending transparency that creates the complexity, and that is as the funds leave the federal government, the first challenge was making sure that we rearranged our systems and our data capture so that we can adequately, timely, and reliably capture that information about how that money is leaving the federal government to that first recipient. But federal funds don't stop at that first recipient. In many, many cases, federal funds cascade down through multiple recipients. The funds might start, for example, in the state of Arizona, but they might end up in the city of Phoenix and then even be spent beyond that to a library or to a school district. And these laws want us, as they should, to track the federal dollar through to what it's ultimately spent on to see if we're getting what value we're getting for our money. And the challenge is that the federal government doesn't always have a relationship and a reporting relationship or connection with some of those subrecipients. So we can call up Arizona on the phone and have a dialogue with them in terms of, you know, did you get the money? Did we report it accurately? And kind of do that kind of reconciliation. But by the time the money ends up, let's say, in the local library or the local school district in Phoenix, we don't have those databases, those contacts. What we rely on is Arizona to connect with Phoenix, and then Phoenix to connect with the school district or the library. And those branches out of all these funds make the entire enterprise more complex. Not impossible, just more complex. And over the past several years, the federal government has been figuring out more and more ways to have those branches tracked, to make those connections. But those connections needed to be built. They weren't available at the time these laws were passed.
Danny, you spent so much time working on these types of things. I have to ask, going to the IRS after all that must have been quite a big change for you.
It was. I mean, I always viewed myself in my career as I was, you know, growing up in government as kind of trying to understand public sector management, how to be effective in it, and all of its variations and incarnations. You know, from the OMB vantage point, you're trying to build a reform agenda and then rally the troops of the federal agencies through our councils, whether it's the CFO Council or the CIO Council, get them involved in architecting those reforms, get the agencies moving in the direction of improvements, whether it's let's purchase IT more effectively, let's strategically source, let's drive improper payments down. And I learned a lot about, you know, how to drive a reform agenda, how to set goals in the federal space, how to build a critical path towards getting to those goals, and how to run projects, like, for example, the Recovery Act. You know, I was, along with a few other key people, that was an extraordinarily challenging time to implement a law of that complexity in a short period of time. And I learned so much about project management in the federal space. And I took all of that accumulated knowledge to the IRS, and I walked into the IRS with a sense of this is a very challenging time. It's a significant public sector management challenge. There's, you know, an IG report out there that has very significant findings. Corrective actions are necessary. We have to diagnose how to build those corrective actions effectively. There are other management challenges that exist within the agency. I had to bring the right talent in. I brought some very, very talented public sector managers. I certainly didn't do it on my own to help with these diagnoses, to figure out what the corrective action plan and to drive us forward. So it was different in the fact that it was, you know, likely the most challenging assignment I've ever had. And obviously the scrutiny, the public scrutiny on it was higher than I'd ever experienced. But at the end of the day, it was a public sector management challenge. And with myself, along with some really top-notch people like Todd Grams from, who I brought over from Veterans Affairs, David Fisher, who I brought over from the Government Accountability Office, Peggy Sherry, who I brought over from the Department of Homeland Security, Jim Taylor, who I brought over from the Department of Labor. You know, I picked extraordinary, talented public sector experts, and then the president picked an extraordinary, talented one in John Koskinen to take over. Now, I think they're on the right path, but ultimately, I viewed it as a public sector management challenge, extremely difficult one, but I'm proud of what we were able to accomplish while I was there.
And when they want you to take a job like that, that is really a tough one, I mean, editorials in the Wall Street Journal naming you and so forth, how do they come at you? Does it a phone call? Do they call you into the White House? How does it happen? And what was your first thought?
That's a great question. Yeah, I was contacted by Dennis McDonough. Jack Lew reached out at the point in time where there was going to be a leadership transition. You know, I had just at the time completed a couple of special assignments projects. One of the things that's such a great environment at the Office of Management and Budget where I was is that in addition to your day job of, kind of driving reforms and working with the councils and moving government forward in a lot of different areas of the management agenda that's being pursued by a particular president, you also get to kind of parachute in on specific challenges or problems that are happening at agencies.
But you must have had a gut reaction when they called you, and you probably called your wife and said, honey, you can't believe what they're offering me. How'd that go?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. It was, well, first of all, it was humbling, getting asked by, at that high level by the President of the United States, by the Secretary of the Treasury, by the White House Chief of Staff to go in and help, address and fix one of the most significant management challenges of the moment. My first sense was, kind of some humility and humbling, and I was just extraordinarily proud of that. And I felt very patriotic, too. I had a sense that this was going to be an extraordinary challenge. It was going to obviously impact me and my family. And, there was going to be a high degree of stress and a high degree of scrutiny. And, but at the end of the day, I felt, a sense of patriotism. I also felt, and this is really critical, I've always been a champion for the federal employee, and I've always wanted to help in any way I could. I mean, that's why I stayed at OMB for as long as I did, because it's such a great platform to assist and help your federal workers and your peers. And, I think I mentioned this in my very first hearing with the IRS. My reaction to being asked to do this at its core was there's a federal agency, one that I have deep respect for, one that plays one of the most critical roles in our entire government, and they were in need. And, the federal employees in that organization, roughly 85 to 90,000 employees, were in a moment of need. And there was the opportunity for me to help. And so there was never a question in my mind that I wouldn't step in to that type of assignment. It's what I worked my whole career towards doing, which is helping the federal government get through management challenges and helping federal employees. So my immediate gut reaction was a combination of feeling humbled, feeling patriotic, but also feeling a sense of an opportunity to help federal employees and help an organization that's critical. So in my mind, there was really no choice but to go do it.
And now that you've left, reflecting back on it, do you think the IRS is on the right path? I mean, this issue still goes on. It still has the budget problems that it had when you were there.
But I definitely think it is in large measure because of the talent and leadership that is there right now. When I was there, were able to, for example, implement all the IG recommendations, build a very robust corrective action plan. I mentioned David Fisher before from the Government Accountability Office. I created the position of Chief Risk Officer within the IRS when I first arrived and appointed David from GAO over to be the Chief Risk Officer and asked him to help implement an enterprise-wide risk management system across the IRS. And that could be a whole other show that we can get into in terms of talking about the benefits of risk management in any organization in driving improvements. And one of the conclusions that I reached when I arrived at the IRS was there was a lack of robust risk management throughout the organization. And so those building blocks, which were put in place in the 7 months that I was at the IRS, are continuing to be built and will drive improvements. And with John Koskinen, who's an extraordinarily strong and talented public management expert, The two deputies there, Peggy Sherry and John Dalrymple, are excellent. And, you know, folks like David Fisher, Jim Taylor, and there are other extraordinarily talented people in the IRS leadership ranks. I think they're moving forward in the right direction. You know, obviously, it's a challenging situation, and things don't happen overnight, and you have to work through these issues in a kind of a deliberative, careful, but efficient way. But I think the building blocks are there to put that agency on the right path, and they can do some great things. They have a great technology leader in Terry Milholland. He's one of the more impressive government people I've ever come across
sure.
in my experience. They do amazing things to maintain the nation's tax system and to do it effectively in so many different regards. So, you know, look, it's a tough situation. They face many of the challenges that a lot of federal agencies face in terms of things that we've been talking about so far today. You know, declining budgets, the need to modernize, the need to invest, an ever-changing complexity to your mission and operations. And then obviously the IRS has gone through a rough period over the last year. But I think, you know, I have optimism that the right leadership team is in place, that we did a good job laying the foundation for reform, improvement, and restoring the public's trust, that John has kind of grabbed that baton and will help move the agency forward.
And just tell us what it was like on the Werfel home front, especially in the early days, weeks, and months of this difficult assignment that you did get.
Well, you know, OMB was no picnic either in terms of stress and late nights. And, you know, I had some tough hearings when I was at OMB, which I can, you know, kind of show you, which you'd say, wow, that looks even tougher than your IRS hearing. So fortunately, you know, that's part of, I think, why I was able to be successful is because there was many moments at OMB where I was tested. In a challenging situation, whether it was on the issue of sequester or on the issue of the Recovery Act and its implementation, and my family, you know, they had, you know, seen this before in different incarnations of, you know, me coming home late night, missing, you know, baseball games and missing family vacations. You know, that there's a lot of sacrifice, not something that a lot of people know, but it's an extraordinary amount of sacrifice that goes on in public sector management in these jobs.
Any reporters camping out near your house or anything like that?
No, I didn't really have, I mean, I won't say that never happened, but it wasn't a big problem. I mean, there was with anything, I think when it's that big of a story, there were moments of, you know, that type of intrusion. But, you know, again, I'll give a lot of credit to my wife. I mean, she is, obviously, you know, the most important person in my life, and was fantastic throughout this entire experience, completely supportive. She's felt very patriotic, too, when this situation came about. And she wants, you know, as a taxpayer, she wanted the IRS to work effectively and to come out of this in a way that they can continue to do their job. And she was, I think, proud of me for getting the assignment and handling it well. So I think we're okay on the home front. We'll be okay over there.